Hello again, everyone. Bernie Miklas back with you here on the Bernie Miklas Show on YouTube. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. And I hope all of you in the St. Louis area are going to be nice and snug. Did you stock up on provisions? You know how it is in the Lou. We tend to freak out over snow, but this one sounds like it could be troublesome. So we'll see. I'm just going to stay at home. All right, let's talk about Cardinals. Let's talk about the weekend that was. Let's talk about Nolan Arenado coming back. By the way, please subscribe if you haven't and hit the like button, and your comments are always appreciated. Let's talk about Nolan Arenado's arrival at spring training. As I said, I didn't think there'd be anything awkward about it at all, and there was nothing awkward about it at all. It was just a stupid media-driven narrative for the most part. Nolan Arenado is back. Though technically he never left, but the effort to trade him was unsuccessful. There wasn't much of a trade market for him for a number of reasons. Primarily, he's got the no trade protection, was serious about using it to control his own fate. Can't blame a guy for that. It's his contractual right to do so. And as we know, he vetoed a potential deal with Houston. At that point, John Mozeliak, his options were extremely limited. Arenado had a five-team list of approved destinations, including the Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, and Padres. I'm not sure who the fifth team was, and truthfully, I really don't care at this point. Maybe it was the Angels because he grew up in Orange County. Maybe not. We do know that Boston was the most likely destination, and it was probably close. But then Alex Bregman accepted their offer, and that was that for Arenado. So he's back with the Cardinals. The other reasons for low interest in Arenado are obvious: concerns over his drop in power production, his remaining contract. There were teams like the Yankees who thought they could swoop in and trade for Arenado and trade for him by doing basically nothing except giving up a declining, problematic pitcher, Marcus Stroman, who they just want to get rid of. They don't want him around, and they don't want that high maintenance personality around and a pitcher with declining stats around. But Mozeliak wasn't going to fall for that. Listen, we got to, before I put this part of it to bed, we just got to understand what the frame of this was. In this trade attempt of Arenado, Mozeliak's obligation was to make the best possible deal for the Cardinals. And that didn't mean you just give Arenado away. And to Mozeliak's credit, I know I'm not allowed to do that. Sorry. To his credit, and also Bill DeWitt's, they never said that this there's some kind of desperation to trade him. They always said he would be welcome back if they couldn't find a trade that would meet what he wanted out of the trade, and they would welcome him back. And that's exactly what happened. To agree to a trade, on the other hand, so in other words, Mo fulfilled his obligation to the Cardinals in this instance. And then for his part, Arenado wanted to do what was best for him and his family. Both sides acted appropriately. And frankly, I am a little tired of talking about this now, which is my fault because I'm talking about it again. But I'm talking about it again as a way to just say, okay, here's the final ruling on all of this stuff. And then I'm going to move on. Maybe the return of Arenado was more likely and inevitable as we thought than we thought through the offseason. The only real mistake, I think, was Mozeliak boldly declaring his confidence about completing a trade for Arenado. And then he came back with a little more month later, and he was actually bigger and bolder by saying Arenado's priority number one, number two, number three. So when by speaking so boldly about these things, you know, and hey, sports writers and sportscasters like quotes. So, I mean, I'm not going to be a hypocrite here, but by saying these things kind of raised the expectation level to basically virtually certain that Arenado would be traded, that when it looked like he wasn't going to be traded, then all of a sudden it was kind of like a big overreaction the other way. And that was based mostly, I would say almost all of that was based on the expectations that Mozeliak himself set, right? There was always going to be a limited market for Arenado. It was always going to be a slim or none situation, given the factors that I described. So when he arrived Sunday in spring training, it was handled well by everyone involved without awkwardness, and nobody was play acting. No one was performing. Teammates were genuinely happy to see Arenado. He was happy to see them and get to work. He exchanged hugs with Marmol and the manager Marmol and also Mozeliak. And to me, this was also genuine because, as Arenado said a million times, he never demanded to be traded. And if he had to come back to St. Louis, he's comfortable in St. Louis. He likes his teammates and, you know, right on down the line. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm sure we're all going to be revisiting this again during the season, later in the season. Now, if a contending team loses its third baseman to injury, Mozeliak will get a call. If Arenado's hitting well enough to improve his trade value and some teams need a third baseman or need a bat or need something, he could be an option at the trade deadline. What the Cardinals could get for him, I have no idea. And at this point, it's immaterial. It doesn't matter because that's down the road. We just have to see how this all plays out. And there is absolutely no reason whatsoever to repeat the same mistake that I and others made the first time, assuming that there would be a trade. We just made that mistake. And, you know, sitting here on February 17th, I see no reason to make the mistake of just saying, oh, yeah, well, they'll trade him later. You know, we don't know. I think Arenado's keyed up to have a really good year, so we'll see. He looks great too, man. He did all that kickboxing training he did. Looks great. I hope his bat's quick. Listen, I'm more interested now in how his presence changes things for the Cardinals going forward. There are ramifications. We've talked about them a lot. I'm going to try to limit it this time. But the number one thing is we know that Nolan Gorman will not play third unless it's a day off for Arenado. We will see Gorman at second base, and we will see Gorman at DH. I want to focus on, you know, it's very confusing because there's a lot of movable pieces in this, a lot of moving parts. So I want to try to simplify it by focusing on the lineup fixtures, you know, the guys that are going to be in there pretty much all the time, except for injury or day offs and all that stuff. And I think we simplify it by listing the guys who will play the most, who will get the most at-bats, and there are seven of them in alphabetical order. Last name, alphabetical order. I hope I did this right. Arenado, Contreras, Donovan, Gorman, Nootbaar, Walker, and Wynn. Those are the seven spots. Those guys will be lineup regulars. Seven spots are spoken for. It's just a matter with some of them what positions they'll occupy on a given day, because there will be a couple of those guys, especially Donovan. I think Gorman going second base to DH. I think Nootbaar could wind up playing left field, center field, who knows where else, but he'll be moving a little bit. But the point is the seven spots are spoken for. And I think as well that I was giving this a lot of thought last night. That's what I do. I stay up late and think about these things. I actually think that there's going to be plenty of work for Burleson as well, but how much work? I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because Burleson, even though he did have his second half wasn't as good as his first half and his final month was really bad. Gosh, he did lead the team in RBIs, and I think he was second in homers, or maybe it was the other way. Maybe he led him in homers and he was second in RBIs, but you get the point. When I think Burleson's not, you know, exactly going to get buried in this scenario now that Arenado's back, but will he lose some at-bats? Probably some. But when Gorman plays second base, Burley figures to be the DH against right-handed starting pitching. Burleson will also get some games at first base. He's handled that okay. And we will likely see him in left field on occasion or even right field on occasion. There are a lot of ways to get him some at-bats. The playing time with Arenado back, the playing time figures to be a timeshare at least three places, center field, catcher, and DH. Now, I suppose second base also qualifies because we will likely see a lot of Gorman and Donovan there. It, again, all depends on the lineup configurations on that day. And as we know, we've talked about it, if Donovan plays a lot in left field, then they could shift Newt Barr to center. The defense wouldn't be as good as the defense provided by Michael Ciani in center. But Newt Barr is fine. He's not awful out there. He's had a season where he was a little above average in center field. There was another season where he was a little bit below average. It's just not going to be a disaster if he plays center field. And as I've said again, and I'm going to say it every time his name comes up about center field, you know, you can't have like a Secret Service agent with him in the outfield to protect him from harm. You can't wrap him in bubble wrap, right? He can't go out there with a suit of armor. He's a ball player. He's got to play. If you are so scaredy cat of using him in center because he might get hurt, well, maybe that's a guy you shouldn't be basing a part of your future on. Just a thought. But no, there will be no security guards, Secret Service protection for Newt Barr if he plays center. He's just got to go out there and play. But we also know, of course, that manager Mon Mall is a big-time Ciani fan, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him go with Ciani, even though the Cardinals last season had the second-worst offense at the center field spot last season. And I went back, and as far as 2001 and last year, would have been, last year, 2024, was the worst season from the years 2001 through 2024. Last season was the worst season the Cardinals have ever had offensively in center field. The catching job will be shared by Ivan Herrera and Pedro Pages. Herrera can DH, but here's something you should know. And yeah, it's a small sample, but it's something you should know because I'm looking at everything. In his 325 career plate appearances overall, he's got a much higher OPS against right-handed pitchers than he does against lefty pitchers. I would have assumed otherwise because Herrera bats right-handed, but he's got a career 810 OPS in the majors versus righties and a 652 OPS, which is bad against lefties. I don't understand it. And, you know, his splits reflected that again in 2024, much better against righties than lefties. So this is just another puzzle piece that we don't know what to do with here. Will Marmol use Herrera as DH against lefties? Given the small sample sizes, I really think it would be silly to scratch Herrera from DH possibilities against lefties. I'm going to use the most overused word in spring training. I am so tired of hearing it, which is why I'm going to use it just to broadcast the fact I'm sick and tired of hearing it. You got to give Herrera runway. Runway. That's one of those Ollie words and Mo words. I don't know why these guys sit around saying, well, let's come up with a way to describe some things. Are they going into a thesaurus to look for words? And then it becomes, they feel obligated to use a word every time they speak. I don't know. I'm tired of hearing about a runway. Only runway I want to hear about is next time I fly and whether the flight I'm on to get to someplace on time, whether the runway is cleared for takeoff. Okay. That's all I care about. Anyway, but if you're going to talk about runway, you shouldn't be limiting a guy like Herrera. You shouldn't be limiting some other players on this team. They're not going to limit Walker and Gorman. Those guys are going to play a lot and a lot and a lot because that was the commitment to them in 2025, and I think they're going to stick with it. Lucan Baker is an interesting guy because I don't know what to do with him either as I'm trying to work this in my mind. He could be in the mix to DH against left-handers, but he doesn't play first base very well. He's sort of a DH type, pinch hitter type. He's hit lefties well in the minor leagues. And last season, but listen, it was only 22 plate appearances, but he slugged 722 against lefties. Even though it was 22 plate appearances, which is nothing, what is that, about seven games, if that? Maybe more like six games, if that? It ain't much to go on, but it left me wanting to see more. So I don't even know if he'll make the team. And after all, again, another small sample. Baker's overall numbers against lefties in the big leagues are not great. In fact, they're pretty bad. But again, the more a guy plays, the more meaningful his statistics become as far as reflecting who he is. It's too early, I'm sorry, for me to chart a roadmap for Victor Scott. and Thomas Ajayi. Let's see how they do in the exhibition games. I do think there's a reason why the Cardinals acquired Michael Hellman from Minnesota, who was about to release him. Hellman is a right-handed bat who can play some center field. In the minor leagues, he put up some numbers. He can also be used all over the diamond. And my point is not to proclaim the greatness of Michael Hellman. That's not my point at all. I'm just saying that's one guy I want to keep an eye on because, again, they picked him up for a reason. Because they need right-handed hitters that can play some center field or play some outfield, other than Jordan Walker in right field, who bats right. So let me circle back to my first point, because it's the most important point of all. The Cardinals essentially have seven hitters who are going to be lineup fixtures. And I don't care how many people whine about the fact Walker and Gorman are going to be those among those fixtures. They are going to give Gorman and Walker 500 to 600 plate appearances, as they should, and that's all there is to it. Mozeliak, by the way, as you may have heard, has started to call 2025 a transition year. So it's no longer a reset year. Who around here has been saying that for weeks now? It wasn't a reset. I wonder who that was. Oh, okay. I think that's all right. Somebody was talking about that a lot. Huh. Anyway, I'm not sure about the transition title, if it works either, because the only transition in the works is the eventual handoff from Mo to Chaim Bloom after the season. The other transitions occurring in their player development and minor league operations, and I'm excited by that because they really need to do it, and some exciting things are going on down there, and this is just the beginning. I look forward to the day where the Cardinals are pumping out prospects, but as well top five, top six in the majors the way they used to be, because it'll just make the whole task of roster building a lot simpler. And you won't be so desperate to go out and try to rent mediocre free agents because you haven't developed enough players at a position or pitchers at a position. But as far as major league talent, the Cardinals are largely running it back with the same cast that was in place in 2024. And I'll talk about this in a minute. But, you know, you got Arenado back. He wants to win. You haven't done a lot as far as offloading some other players or contracts. So that's why I say, you know, they're largely running it back with the same cast. And here is what I mean. I've mentioned this to you before. I'm glad to see other people in the media picking up on it. But batters who took 82.5% of the plate appearances last season are still here now that Arenado is a Cardinal again. Well, he never wasn't a Cardinal, but you know what I mean. So 82.5% of the plate appearances taken last year were done by guys who are still in place. The only notable subtraction is Paul Goldschmidt. Well, what about starting pitching? Going back to when Andre Pallante was inserted into the rotation on May 29th of last year, to me, that seemed to be the ideal starting point to make my point, because when he was put in the rotation on May the 29th, he made 20 starts and became a really important guy in the rotation. So I want to measure it from his ascendancy to a starting rotation job, one which, by the way, as we've talked about a lot, him becoming a starting pitcher was his idea. It wasn't the manager or the president of baseball operations' idea. Pallante knew more than they knew about what he was capable of doing. Anyway, if we go with May 29th to the end of the season, the Cardinals are returning pitchers. The 2025 Cardinals are returning pitchers who made 71.5% of the starts last season, from May 29th to the end. And these guys that are still here also provided 70% of the starting pitching innings. The notable subtractions are Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn. But now we're going to have to wait and see if the Cardinals plan to give starting roles at some point, sooner or later, to young pitchers like Quinn Matthews, Michael McGreevy, maybe later on some others. But I don't want to flood this part of the discussion with a bunch of names, because you know where it starts. It starts with Matthews and McGreevy. If we're talking about guys getting a shot at the rotation early on, it'll be one of those guys or both of those guys. I think they'll be the first guys called in to that assignment if the Cardinals are ready to shake up their rotation. or ready to go with a six-man rotation, or whether, you know, ready to make room for them by any means necessary. All right, what about the bullpen? So we talked about the position. We talked about 82.5% of the plate appearances from last year still in place. Those guys talked about how, let's just call it 71% of the starting pitching innings and starts from May 29th to the end of the season. The guys who did all that, 71% of the innings and starts, they're all still in place. So what about the bullpen? It was St. Louis's biggest strength in 2024, and all the armaments are back except for the dependable and very good setup specialist Andrew Kittredge, who signed a free agent deal with the Orioles after the Cardinals showed no interest in retaining him. And I think he got a one-year $11 million deal. So the Cardinals wanted no part of that price. But even with Kittredge gone, here's the thing that fits what I'm talking about, the running it back aspect. Even with Kittredge gone, 76% of last year's bullpen innings are still in place down there in Jupiter in 2025. So let's recap. I probably don't need to. The talent that provided 82.5% of last year's plate appearances are in place. The only change, Gorman and Walker are going to get a lot more at-bats this time. Starters who made 71.5% of the starts from May 29th to the end of the season are still in place. The bullpen crew that supplied 76% of the relief innings last season, still in place. Is that a dramatic change? No. Is it a radical change? No. Is it a substantial change? No. But with Arenado still a Cardinal, and with so many of the hitting and pitching parts still in place, I'd have to say that the 2025 Cardinals are going to look a lot like the 2024 Cardinals, and it's just that management and the manager think that the players they have, especially the hitters, can do a lot better in 2025. Well, we're going to start to find out on that. I think the first game of the regular season is March 27th. We'll get our answers then. And the other change is that they're moving some of the pieces around this season, like Wilson Contreras playing first base instead of catching. But that does, in theory, create an opportunity for a younger catcher behind the plate. I don't know if Herrera will choose. I don't know if Marmol will choose the right one. But, again, we'll have to wait and see on that. But Mozeliak and Marmol clearly believe in the team that went through the first full squad workout of spring training on Monday down at Jupiter. But as always, yeah, they believe in the team. They're confident in the team. They think the team that can surprise us and all this other stuff. But as always, the Cardinals specialize in the Mozeliak special, half-measure steps. If Mozeliak and Marmol are so enamored of this team, then why doesn't the front office reinforce the roster some to give the 25 Cardinals a better shot at success? If they believe they're going to be successful, why not give them a better chance to be successful? According to Fangraph's payroll accounting, as of Monday, the Cardinals currently have an estimated payroll of $148 million. Let's compare. That's down from $183 million last season, so it's a drop of $35 million in payroll from 2024. Now, Chairman Bill DeWitt Jr. is wisely investing significant dollars in the restoration of the player development and minor league systems. I'm all in favor of that. And so that means that I'm also being realistic about the Cardinals and what they will spend. And so I'm not saying we'll go out and get the best relief pitcher that's still on the market, or go get this guy, go get that guy. I'm not saying that. I'm just talking about economical moves where you can get good value for the dollar and give your team a better chance. If you believe in this team, then why don't you give them a chance by giving them some more help? Listen, you don't need me to tell you this, because of course everybody's been all over this. The Cardinals have made a big part of their plan obvious, which is a large part of that plan was slashing payroll. The timing and the decision makes sense. But when I say it makes sense, it made sense because it was predicated on the assumption that this would be a true reset season, and then Arenado would be traded, and Helsley and Fetty would be traded. But none of that happened. And again, in Arenado's case, I don't blame the Cardinals for that. But they could have moved some money off the books. They chose not to. What's the goal for 2025? I don't know what the goal is. Did they keep Ryan Helsley and Eric Fetty, the starting pitcher, because they truly believe they can be a surprise team, or even, dare we say, a playoff contender? Did they go this way because they believe Helsley and Fetty can be cashed in for prospects at the trade deadline if the Cardinals aren't doing all that hot in the standings? Well, what happens if either arm gets hurt or pitches poorly? The Cardinals are hedging. They're hedging again. They want us to believe the team's better than we think it is and that they will surprise us and they will be entertaining and enjoyable and exciting. And they might just contend for a wild card spot. They want to tell us all that. They want us to believe in it. But it's not backed up by action. The Cardinals are doing the Cardinals thing we've come to expect. They're not all in, but they're not all out. In other words, they're not tanking, but they're not really serious about contending. They pitched the reset plan, but they didn't reset. Now it's a transition, the new word, but it's not a transition on the field. The Cardinals always speak in ways where they constantly contradict themselves. They don't need someone like me to point it out or media or fans to point it out. If you track what they say, it'll soon be followed by a contradiction. They think this team can have a successful season, but okay, cool. So you're going to try to go out and make it better. No, they do nothing to make moves to support the team. The Cardinals are, again, a reminder, they haven't signed one free agent, only team in baseball. The Cardinals are counting on improvement from within, and there's a plausible chance of that coming to fruition. But then again, will the manager put more of an emphasis on boosting the offense when he fills in the lineup card, or will he put defense first? Did the Cardinals and their manager learn anything at all about why the 2024 team failed to make the playoffs? Hint, it's called the offense. I would say that all of this is terribly confusing, but the Cardinals are the Cardinals are the Cardinals are the Cardinals are the Cardinals, doing Cardinals things, doing the same Cardinals things, doing them over and over and over and over again. So why would I be confused? That's kind of stupid of me to be confused. This is who they are. This is what they are. And we're not going to find out what the future is going to look like until we get there. After 162 games in 2025 regular season, well, the process will really begin. The transition will really be underway because that's when Mozeliak hands off to Bloom. And will the Cardinals begin to change their philosophy, their identity with Bloom moving in and Mo moving out? Will there be some moves made? And I'm not talking about free agent signings. I mean, just a general philosophical shift and sort of a declaration of, you know, what Chaim Bloom's vision is that will be different than what the Mozeliak vision has been, right? So we're going to be looking for changes that way. And I don't know how early we can expect changes that way, but we're going to be looking. All right, now that all this confusion can be basically brushed away and all this, these half measure steps and all of this, all the constant contradictions of what they say, are we going to see something more coherent, more smarter, more disciplined, more on point? Is there going to be a collective identity, or is it going to be a hodgepodge? Is it going to be a clear philosophy, or is it going to change from one week to the next? Bloom's moving in and Mo is moving out, and that'll be a positive thing. But until then, I guess we're in for another season. Listen, I'm not even saying it's going to be bad baseball. It might be pretty good baseball. But we're in for another season of not knowing exactly what the Cardinals' plan is. Because if you wait a little bit, and I'm exaggerating on purpose here, but if you wait to see what that plan is under Mo, don't worry, sit tight, because it's going to change every 20 minutes. So good luck to the Cardinals in 2025. I think it's an interesting team. I think it's going to be an interesting spring training, but they are running back most of what the roster looked like in 2024. That'll do it for me. I appreciate you guys, as always, for hanging with me. Thank you. This has been the Bernie Miklas Show here on YouTube.